Bob McGowan Podcast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the Bet Rivers online casino and sportsbook app today. John Shannon is with us as per usual. Hello, Shanny.
Robert.
Some hockey talk today, or maybe not.
Well,
who knows?
I think you asked on the air last week where Doug McClain was.
I may have.
Yeah, I think you did. Or maybe it was off air. But so the producer went out and found the old geezer in Florida somewhere. So,
well, that's where he usually is, either there or PEI. Or,
yes,
you know, or maybe just in the RV somewhere.
Or on the pickleball court, you know?
Oh, yeah, exactly. the former coach, former president of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sure. I don't know what other titles
former
he's held.
Former general manager, former broadcaster.
And former broadcaster. Doug McClain will join us from Florida when we come back after this message. Hi, this is Bob McCowan for BetRivers.com. Hey, if you're looking for a sports book or casino app, you should check out the Bet Rivers Sports and Casino app today. Play all of your favorite casino games for real money, anywhere and anytime. Plus, get in the action with each sports game with hundreds of sports betting options. And get ready to feel like a VIP, because you'll earn both loyalty level points and bonus store points on every real money wager you make. You must be 19 plus, available in Ontario only. Please play responsibly. If you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, contact Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 or speak to an advisor free of charge. BetRivers.com. McCowan and Shannon back with you, and we are with our pal, our buddy, our chum. Doug McClain is with us from Florida. How are you, okay?
I wish my poor mother was alive to hear you say that, because she hated your guts ever since we had that falling out. So
I was going to say,
back in the good books.
I am a little surprised that was such a warm welcome. I remember the days of, well, you know what, that McGowan guy, you know, McGowan this, McGowan that. I mean,
well, it's like the meeting when I got fired. I went in, everything was positive, upbeat. Oh, by the way, we're not having you back. So it was reminded me a little like that. So thanks, Bob, for the introduction. I really appreciate it.
Look, I didn't talk to Don Cherry for 5 years. I had 5 years with Gary Bettman. I didn't talk to him. And I don't remember how long it was with you, because you're relatively insignificant compared to the other two. But I know there was a period of time we did not communicate.
Well, you know what? The same thing happened to me in St. Louis. I screwed up one morning. I was assistant coach, and my job was to go and get the – we used to fly a commercial, obviously, with the Blues. And Harry Ornes was our owner, and I screwed up one time. I didn't get Dan Kelly an aisle seat and in the smoking section.
Right.
And he went nuts and never spoke to me for 6 months. We finally made up at the draft in Montreal, so I felt better, but – and Barkley Plager and Bobby said, don't worry, Doug. We went through 6 months where he didn't speak to us either. Just let it go, shake it up. But I'll tell you what, I got a mile seats and in the smoking section for the rest of my career in St. Louis.
Oh, well,
that's when an assistant coach actually did lots of work rather than collect pucks.
Well, that was one job. The other job was getting tickets on the road. And I used to make money on that, because I used to say to the guys, here, Bernie, Federico, Sutter, all the guys, they were making $300,000 a year then. I was making 35. And I used to say, boys, if you want tickets, you give me the exact amount, because there's no change. So I used to make $50 a game. It was a pretty good deal.
Better than your per diem.
Exactly. Anyway.
You bastard, do you have any friends at all left?
I do, but none of them are in the hockey business at
yeah,
all.
None of them.
They're pickleball buddies of mine now, or golf buddies.
That's I was going to say, I saw that great picture last week on social media of you won some alleged championship, but it's pickleball. Now, Doug, tell me about it. Pickleball. Come on.
Pickleball is the fastest growing sport in America. It is a great sport. It's like racquetball, only the ball is very slow moving, you know? It's a wiffle ball almost. But we won the Boca del Vista championship here.
Great.
And, you know, we played pretty well. I become a force here in the condo. people are nervous to play me. As I was saying to boys last week, I beat this couple, and Jill and I hadn't beaten them in a couple of years. And then I told them a little later in the interview that, by the way, they're 78 years of age.
Oh, and you destroyed them, right?
Destroyed them.
Are you as intimidating on the pickleball court as you were like when you were talking to the Situation Room and leaving Stephen Wacom voicemails and things like that?
Steve Wacom saved those for years. He told me every time he wanted to have a good laugh, he'd put the voicemail of me phoning him. And Coley Campbell probably had a few of them too.
But you're not that intimidating on the pickleball court.
You know what? I was never really intimidating. I was just a big mouth. And now, you know, now that I've retired, I've become just a good guy. I mean, I'm very well respected in the condo area.
Would you like a second opinion on that?
They know I'm an author now. I'm writing a book. My book's basically done. But they see me as an ex-hockey guy and an author. Now, James Patterson's mother-in-law lived right above us. She passed away a year ago. So James Patterson and I are sort of a team here at Boca del Vista, here where we live. So James makes $90 million a year as an author. I come in a little under that, but you know, we're both authors, you know?
That's great.
So hold on. But James Patterson writes fiction. Are you telling us you're writing fiction now or what?
A lot of what I wrote is fiction because it's a little bit like your book, Shanny. By the way, I'm like Jeff Rimmer. I haven't got my free copy yet, and I'm too damn cheap to pay for it.
Well, somebody on this show got a free copy.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Good, Bob?
No, it's not really that good. Just the parts about me.
Yeah.
It's the only parts I'm interested in. I don't remember seeing your name in Shannon's book.
No, it's in five times because.
Oh, is it?
Mike Russo, who's was basically Doug's source on everything for years. Mike Russo counted how many times Doug's name was mentioned. Yeah, yeah.
Five times.
You know why Mike Russo is a great friend of mine. You know that, eh? And why he was more of a source than I was, if the truth was known, but. Russo came into my office when I was coaching the Panthers. He had just been assigned to the job as the beat writer. And I had to take him up to the whiteboard and explain to him what an offside was. And now he's one of the geniuses in the game out there. Mike Russo, this world-renowned hockey guy. And I'm thinking, are you shitting me? Is that the same guy that didn't know what an offside was? Anyway, he's a great guy.
So, McLean, are either Shannon or I in this book, or is this entirely about you?
No, we're not in it.
There's lots of eyes and knees in there, I guess.
No, you know what it is? It's not about me. This is the interesting. Simon & Schuster called me and asked.
Pardon?
It's a book about the National Hockey League draft is what it's a book about. And my stories about the draft. But I got one great story to tell you. John Ferguson Sr. Did you hear this story, Shanny?
No, I haven't heard it.
So John Ferguson Sr. is a head of scouting for San Jose Sharks, okay? Amateur scouting. And he loved Olli Jokinen. Absolutely loved Olli Jokinen. He had the second pick of the draft. San Jose did. And all year long, Olli Jokinen, Olli Jokinen, Olli Jokinen. Then at the World Championships, Fergie's downstairs at the Asperia Hotel in Finland, where we used to all hang out at the World Championships in Helsinki. Remember the bar down in the basement of the Asperia Hotel?
Yes, sir.
So anyway, Fergie's down there late into the evening and early into the morning, I should say. And he looks out in the floor through a cloud and he sees Olli Jokinen up shuffling around the dance floor. He goes up to Olli and he said, hey, young fella, you should get your ass home. And Olli gave him the old, get lost, old man. I'm having fun. He's lucky he's still alive, firstly. Secondly, Fergie goes back to the San Jose meetings and he said, we are not taking Olli Jokinen. Not a chance. Instead, we're going to drop down and we're going to take Patrick Marleau instead of Olli Jokinen.
Well, that worked out all right.
How bizarre is that?
That's the science of the draft, right? How late do the guys?
The science of the draft. There's some great drafts, but anyway, so it's it's really about my experiences at the draft. And yeah, I had to eat crow quite a bit in the book with some of my picks. And, you know, it was kind of a fun exercise. Scott Morrison did a fabulous job as the writer, helping me.
So you didn't really write it?
No, you know what? I sat down and wrote 14 chapters of 6,000 words myself on my iPad. And then I sent the chapters to Scott. I just sent them to Scott like a year ago, and then we'd go back and forth. But Scott rewrote my chapters. I mean, the most I had ever written, Shani, was an email before that.
Yeah.
And to sit down and write, you know, 70,000 words, it was an unbelievable, daunting exercise. But Scott made it enjoyable because he's such a treat to work with, let me tell you.
I know every time I talked to you, you would say, oh, I've got to write another chapter today. This is awful. This is, you know, I mean.
It was tough. It really was. But it was fun. And then, you know, it's a little bit of history about how I got to the league and how I got these jobs and how I got fired. It was kind of a fun, and how Bob McCown's name is in the book.
Oh, there you go.
Because he had given me, and Nick Kiprios were responsible for me getting the job at Sportsnet. And you might be in there because I said I really enjoyed working with some of the older guys, you know, in the office.
Well, you're right about the older guys.
What?
You're right about the older guys part. He would fit that.
Are you talking to me?
For helping me, for big time getting me the job at Sportsnet. I really appreciate that. I don't know if I've ever thanked you for that.
No, you haven't.
Long before you were on Sportsnet, you were on Hockey Night in Canada. Let's remember that.
That's where you're in the book. You phone me sitting by my pool in Florida and saying, hey, Doug, I got a chance.
The truth was I phoned you and I talked to Jill.
Hell yeah.
And I told Jill, I said, you know, he should get out. He should just take a break and come and work for us for a while just to relax.
Yeah.
And she said, you think he'd be any good? I said, well, we'll give him a chance.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. And you know who you put me with the very first game?
Dick Irvin and who?
Montreal Form, me doing the color with Dick.
Yeah.
Seriously. I was so scared. I didn't know. It was like, and you barking in my ear.
Oh, come on. Right. You didn't know. You know
I didn't. I did not. This is all news to me. I didn't know this happened.
What?
This is all news to me. I didn't know you did this.
What happened was after Doug's run to the Stanley Cup Final in '96, you know, we had made Doug a star. We had sent TV crews to the island, and you know, and had the whole town of Summerside chanting his name, and had a big cutout of him, and he, you know, ran the feature on during the Stanley Cup Final So there was the power of Hockey Night in Canada. Well, then, you know, a year later, he gets fired.
Two years.
Okay. And so...
They've really done well since I got fired, though, the Panthers. They've really done well.
Well,
here's how... I said this to somebody last night. Here's how bad they are. I was fired, what is it, over 20 years ago?
Yeah.
And I still have the most playoff wins in franchise history. I have 22 and Joel Quenneville has 4.
Well, and he got fired too.
Left. Yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt you, Shane.
No, so we had become semi-friends and we could phone each other and talk. And when Doug got fired by the Panthers, it was pretty natural for me that, you know, we'll check this guy, the gift of the gab. We needed another body every once in a while. And that was always phone the coach that was just fired. He might remember some guys in the game for a couple of weeks and get him in the booth. And that's what we did for, I think you did 2 Saturdays, right?
I did. And then I ended up doing ESPN with Bill Clement and Gary Thorne.
Okay.
And of course, the two of them weren't speaking. And I was in between the two of them as a color commentator. And I didn't know they didn't speak to each other. I mean, what the hell is this? I've watched these guys on TV for 20 years. They don't speak to each other. And I'm with them in between the two of them doing a game. Anyway, it was fun. It was a great experience. And
then you realize that there's more future in television than there is in hockey management. There's no money, but there's better future.
But you know what I was thinking this morning before coming on here, and if somebody told me this, and watching this whole Boudreaux Rutherford joke of a whatever that is, and I'm thinking, you know, somebody told me 20 years ago that nobody ever leaves the National Hockey League happy. Not even if you're Scotty Bowman. You leave the game pissed off. Is that unbelievable, though? And Shanny, it's true. How many people do you know that have left the game and are content? Sam Pollock, would he be the only one? Like, I don't know of anybody that really leaves the game other than they're pissing and moaning and pissed off about what happened. It's unbelievable. I was lucky. I got to do TV.
Yeah, well, and I mean, the best example was Harry Neal. We did the same thing with Harry Neal in 85, got him into the business. And he got to the point where, why would I go back to coaching? There's more job security. Again, there's not near the money. Actually, in the 80s, there was about the same amount of money. And you know, you go to the Stanley Cup every year. You work with some good people, and there's not near the pressure.
Yeah, but those days are gone to a great extent.
Yeah, it's not. It's
not that way in broadcasting anymore, John.
I tell you, well, not in our country, but I tell you what, Rick Tocchet, you know, I know that there are friends of Rick Tocchet's that picked up the phone and said, why are you doing this? You're making $1 million a year at TNT.
Yeah.
And you're working one day a week. You're having fun. Why would you jump in? Because, you know, if we're still doing this podcast 3 years from now, what are we going to be talking about? What happened to Rick Tocchet in Vancouver?
Yeah, I know. It's funny how it goes. I never forget sitting in my office and there was rumors that I was going to get fired.
Okay? Which time?
In Columbus.
Okay.
And I was president and GM. And my assistant came in, Carrie, my executive assistant. She said, it was Rachel. Carrie had gone back to school. So Rachel came in and said, Doug, there's an envelope here that's addressed to the Blue Jackets. So I thought, okay, I'll open it up. I open it up and it's Craig Patrick applying for my job. I mean, are you kidding me? Craig's a friend of mine. I worked as a GM with him next to him for 11 years. And I'm opening up Craig Patrick's resume applying for my job. Like, seriously.
Did you call Patrick?
I didn't. I didn't have the heart to. I just thought, what the hell?
That actually reminds me of a story. In the late 90s, I'm driving into the office on my way to CBC, and in the car, the phone rings, and it's Jacques Demers. And Jacques Demers is the coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning at the time. Hello. Hey, John. Yeah, Jacques Demers. Hey, Jacques, how are you? He says, good. Listen, it's the 1st of March, and, playoffs are coming up. What do you got? Are you adding any announcers for the playoffs? I said, Jacques, you're 4 points out. Oh, we're not going to make it. Don't worry.
Don't worry.
Don't worry. I'll be ready. I'll be ready for the playoffs for you.
Oh, so. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But anyway, it's a lot of, you think back, there's so many laughs, so many great times. It's mind boggling when you think of it. And then I watch this Boudreaux Rutherford fiasco and thing. But you know what? I go back to Jimmy when he was hiring his coach in Pittsburgh. And I interviewed for the job with Jimmy, for Pittsburgh, out of the blue. I remember we were in Madison Square Garden working and I had to go back and do the interview. So he gets this big job in Pittsburgh. The first guy he tries to hire is the guy that was in Calgary, Carolina, and got kicked out of the league.
Bill Peters.
So he tried to hire Bill Peters. That's who he wanted. Couldn't get him. The next guy he wanted was Willie Desjardins. Well, Willie took the Vancouver job. Then he hires Mike Johnson. Right. Great guy, Portland Winterhawks.
Right.
So he was 0-3 on that hiring. And all of a sudden, he gets lucky. He fires Johnson and brings Sullivan up from the minors. And Sullivan becomes the greatest coach in the history of hockey. And they win 2 Stanley Cups. So it took, Jimmy was like basically 0-3. Finally, he got it right on the fourth one. And the rest is history. I mean, I know he won the cup in Carolina, which was great. He's had an unbelievable career. He's a Hall of Famer. But this debacle there was one of the worst I've ever seen. I've never heard a president say, yes, I'm talking to other people about the job, but Bruce is our coach today. I've heard of them doing it behind the scenes. And that's Jimmy. He's just, as he said, too honest. But I've never heard a GM ever say, "Oh yeah, I'm interviewing other people," we're working our way through it. The guy's still coaching. It's bizarre. Anyway.
Well, on that, we've talked a fair bit about the Boudreaux situation. Have you ever seen a fan base as supportive of a coach who is about to get fired as we saw with Boudreaux?
Probably me in Florida was a second. Not anywhere close, but close. When I got fired, it was wild down here. It really was. Not close to the Boudreaux. I've never seen anything close to Boudreaux.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, just the fact that, you know, they could show demonstratively in a game. Usually it's fire the coach or fire the manager or sell the team. This one was the other way around.
This was unprecedented in the history of the National Hockey League, in my opinion.
Yeah, me too.
Unprecedented.
Yeah.
Hold on. So let's go back to you. So you interviewed for the Penguins job as a head coach?
Yeah, when I was at Sportsnet.
Yeah.
And when we were in Montreal doing the Rangers-Montreal series.
Yeah.
That's when I interviewed. And Jimmy made the decision, you know, he said, well, you know, he said, you had a great interview. It was great. You've been out of it a while, and I'm going to go with somebody that's been, and I appreciate it. I thought I had a great interview. We had a great chat. Didn't get it, and that was fine, you know. But that's life.
Would you have taken it?
Well, when you have a chance to coach Crosby and Malkin and Letang and Fleury, what do you think I would have done?
Yeah, of course you would have.
And you know what? One of Jimmy's questions was, "What would you do on the bench if Sid and Malkin told you to F off?" On the bench, that was one of the questions.
Really?
And what was the answer?
I said, Jimmy, I guarantee you, they would never tell me to F off on the bench. I guarantee you that would never happen.
Oh, good answer.
Yeah, that was the truth. Because you don't ever let it get to that on the bench. You know, you let guys get mad at you on the bench, but you never let it get to that point as a coach. The same as in business, you don't let it get really to that point too often, you know. So, but we had Jimmy was, I like Jimmy, I really do. I don't get what this was, how this all came down. It was just so bizarre to me. It was on Jimmy like for me.
Yeah. What do you think happens to Gabby? Do you think Gabby gets another kick? And I mean, he went out.
I think he will get opportunities when people are really looking for a short-term guy to come in and finish the season, maybe. I don't see him getting a long-term deal. Do you guys agree with that? I love Gabby. I mean, I played junior against him when he was at the Marlies. I was with Montreal. He was a friggin' great hockey player, great person. I've never heard a bad thing about him.
No,
I just
never.
See him more as a short-term guy.
No, I don't. I'm rooting for him because he's a pal.
Yeah,
and has been for 50 years.
And he's a
great guy.
You know where I don't know Bruce like you know him. I know him just to coach and being in the league with him. But Mark Curtin and he are best friends.
Yeah.
And Mark Curtin told me, he said, this is one of the greatest guys you'll ever meet. If Mark Curtin says that, that's all I need to hear.
Yeah.
But I know Bruce like, you know, to say hello to him and be around him and to have a beer with him. That's how I know him.
You know, I know it's just a coincidence, but there was a documentary on Harold Ballard aired in Canada this weekend.
Yeah, did you see it, John?
Yeah,
I did. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, but the parallels, and part of the documentary is to discuss what happened to Roger Neilson with the paper bag and firing him in Montreal on the Wednesday and rehiring on Saturday and where the paper bag to surprise.
I remember that.
Well, Bruce was on that team.
Really?
He didn't play that night. He played 24 games for the Maple Leafs that year. And you're just thinking, oh, my goodness gracious. Because that was the, you know, generational stuff. And the questions are, have you ever seen anything like how Boudreaux's been managed in Vancouver? Oh, yeah, we have.
And
in fact,
I saw
was
you,
in the building.
I saw you bring that up this past week, and I sort of chuckled because I never would have put the... Now, Gord Stellick told me he's the guy that fired Roger Neilson and brought him back, and Ballard didn't even know about it. Is that true?
Well, you
can ask Gord Stellick ran the Leafs in those days, not
you
Ballard.
Can ask Gord on his show. He's not on this show.
No. I'm kidding.
Listen, guys, we're halfway through. We got to take a quick break. We'll come back with more. Doug McLean
is with us. We haven't talked about one thing yet.
Yeah. We'll start then. We'll start the show after this message.
Okay.
McCowan and Shannon back with you with Doug McLean in Florida.
By the way, you're on the show. You're on the show because last week Bob said, "Where's Doug McLean? What's going on with Doug McLean?" You know, and so, you know, the producer went out and found you and you know, gave you, we're putting you in the spotlight for one more time before you, that book tour. Are you ready for the book tour?
You know what? I'm not looking to do podcasts. I'm looking for free meals. That's all I'm looking for. You know, I don't need podcasts.
What time does happy hour start?
Well, you know what? Jill and I, we'll have it on the patio on the ocean and we just sort of relax. It's just a different lifestyle, but it's pretty good, you know? So, but anyway, no, look, I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Now, Bob, you know that Doug's new favorite toy is his mobile home, right? It's not a Winnebago, it's a Mercedes. And now he's like every other senior around America, driving from Maine to Washington State, down to Vegas, across Texas, into Huntsville, Alabama. You know, Doug can
Biloxi,
do it.
Mississippi.
Yeah, sure. Doug's like Charles Carralt on the road.
So you've got it with you right now, the home?
We did. Yeah, we can. But we had three summers. We put 32,000 miles on this Mercedes 25-foot Class C. It's the smaller Class C, wider one.
But it's a Mercedes.
But 32,000 miles we put on it. We've been to Utah. We've been to the Shenandoahs. It's been an amazing experience. So we've sort of had fun. And now we've done it for 3 years and now we're going to switch off and do some other trip because we're going to do Portugal in the spring and we want to do Italy again. So we're going to probably move away from the RV and start doing some different trip. I mean, it's just, you're trying to fit everything in, you know, I'm busy. And then being an author, it's even tougher. You know?
And a pickleball champion.
And a pickleball champion.
And I play golf every Sunday and Wednesday with these guys. By the way, my golf game's gone to another level. 14 handicap.
Right. It's just for the record, we have had Laurie Kane on this show. And Laurie Kane has been, you know, wise with her words of suggesting that you don't take coaching very well and you're only going to plateau and never get very much better. She was pretty frank about it, wasn't she, Bob?
No, she was. You know,
Laurie,
you know, PEI people.
Yeah, well, Laurie joined me on the 17th hole this summer. You know, and walked the last two holes. And actually, I hit the ball pretty good. Then on the 18th hole, I missed my putt. And she gives me a putting lesson on the goddamn green.
Okay? Lucky you.
And I'm sitting there. And then she finishes and she walks away. And I said to my buddies, I don't understand one word she said to me. And they said, yes, your eyes were glassed over when Lori was. I was awestruck by her being an LPGA. But you know what? She's a fabulous person. I love Lori. Her father was my coach in college. And you know who I got to meet and be friends with down here is Meg Mellon and Beth Daniels, who are great friends of Lori Kane's,
right,
who live in Delray.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm at the PGA National Store here in Delray. And I was over there picking up a hat for Christmas. And I look over and the two of them are putting on the green. Of course, nobody knows who they are. I mean, these are legends, right, on the LPGA. And I yelled over, "What do you two know about putting?" And they turn around. They were season ticket holders of the Panthers when I coached them, but they're great friends with Lori, and that's how I met them. And they're just fabulous people. But talk about legends in the women's game. And Lori, I think the world of Lori. I really do.
So how far away from the Florida Panthers arena are you right now?
About 45 minutes.
Do you go to many games?
I went last year to the Bruins. When the Bruins are in town, I used to go and watch them because Clark had a client on the team, Sean Corrali, and Dell. You know, but I might go twice a year, max. You know, I get the games on TV. I don't, as I said to somebody the other night, I was all excited about watching the game. And then I thought, you know, I think I'll watch Yellowstone instead. You know,
yeah,
that's where I am, you know.
Yeah, I know.
And is that so? What else? Give us your Netflix list of viewing. What's your favorite?
Well, Yellowstone is my go-to one, you know. And then 1883, and then 1923. I'm sort of sticking with the Yellowstone group right now. And other than that, I mean, I tried to watch Meghan and Harry, but oh my God, it drove me nuts. So I had to get out of that. Jill, I go to bed and Jill watches that shit. So I find the odd one when we get into it, but I don't remember all the names.
So you're not really following the National Hockey League anymore?
You know what? I really follow it closely, the standings. I really follow the standings.
That's your manager's DNA.
Yes, I checked the standings. I checked the scores. I watched a period of the Leafs last night. I watched a period of the Rangers, Florida last night. So I catch a period every now and then and try to stay up on it. But because I talk to Gerard once in a while with the Rangers, I talk to some buddies around the league. But I Nick's always phoned me. Can you get me? Is there anything going on here? Is anything going? I said, Nick, how the hell would I know what's going on? I'm out of the loop, man. You know, well, can you check into that for me? No, Nick, you check into it. I'm not getting paid anymore. You know, I used to give you all your scoops when I worked for you. I'm not giving them to you anymore, you know?
So let's talk a little hockey then in the few minutes we have left. The Bruins are going crazy. We know that. The Maple Leafs are second, but it's really important that they stay in second and don't get caught by Tampa Bay or anybody else, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, they're going to play Tampa. Everybody knows that. The Bruins are by far the best team in the NHL, but, you know, the Bruins have been really good a lot. And I'm really anxious to see what the Bruins do with the deadline. I think they're going to take a run. I mean, I keep hearing Horvat, but I think they're going to try to do something. They had one of the best pickups last year at the deadline in Hampus Lindholm.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, one of the best pickups. He's been great. So I see them being active. The Leafs and Tampa Bay. So I'm sort of picking the Leafs to beat Tampa Bay. But I don't know why, because I look at them and I say, okay, can Hedman handle Matthews? Well, there's a good chance he and Sergachev can handle Matthews. Vasilevskiy's the best goaltender in the NHL, and we're not sure. Samsonov looks good, and Murray's had a good year, but are they as good as him? Then you look at the top six, and you say, Toronto's really got a great top six, but geez, look at the way Point's playing, and look at the way, you know, the group are playing. I mean, the top sixes are even. I mean, it's going to be a hell of a series. And Toronto could lose, or Toronto could win in the first round. That's hard to believe. That good a team, but that's where it is for both of them.
The thing about
the challenge of this division, really, when
yeah,
you think
sure.
about it, when you think three of the top five teams, top of the six teams in the league are in one
are in
division,
that division. Yeah.
It becomes a real challenge.
And I was looking last night, what about New Jersey and Rangers in the first round with New Jersey, probably with home ice. I mean, that's a big series. But you know what? You got to give Tampa a lot of credit. I here's the situation I was really watching. Because this is what I like to watch at trade deadline. Last year, Tampa Bay gave two first-round picks and two prospects for Hagel. Remember that deal? People shook their heads. Okay?
With Chicago, yeah.
Yep, with Chicago. Here was the rationale behind the trade. Hagel comes in, and he's going to be he signed a three-year deal at $1.5 million. And they give up two firsts, which really are close to 2 seconds. The two prospects they're giving up probably will never play. And the two firsts are really seconds because they're going to be the 28th, the 32nd pick, probably.
Right.
Hagel signs a three-year deal at 1.5. So Tampa's rationale is we get a top six guy, for sure a top nine, but a top six guy for 3 years for $1.5 million. So they gave up the picks. They got the cap deal. They got the salary. They got their top six. And they have a three-year window to win, and then they know it's going to be a rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the rationale of that trade. And it really is kind of intriguing when you see some of these deals about giving up first, you know? So they're an astute group there, and they'll probably edit the deadline, and Toronto, it's going to be fun to watch what Toronto does.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If you're a general manager in the West, are you more likely to make changes to your team because the West is really wide open? I mean, there isn't a Boston Bruins in the West.
No.
But you can't tell me Colorado's there yet because it's just
But we can't say they're not, Shanny, till we see them healthy. Landeskog's a big loss. You know, Makar's been banged up. I mean, I still think that they're the best team in the West. I still really believe that. But you're right. There's not an out-and-out top team there.
But there is in the East. So are you more likely to make moves? Are we more likely to see more moves in the West than we are the East?
I think the pressure that's on every GM to win a round and to get in the playoffs is over the top. I mean, just look at if Poile misses in Nashville, if Zito misses in Florida, you know, if Chris McFarland's got to do some damage after replacing Joe Sakic. And, you know, I hope C-Mac can do it because he worked for me for 11 years in Columbus. And I love the kid. I mean, I just think there's the Edmonton Oilers with Ken Holland has got it. They've got to do some damage. Mm-hmm. The Calgary Flames with Sutter and you know, the Tree Lemon, they got an unbelievable pressure to get in. So yeah, there's big time pressure in both the East and the West. It's on over the top, the pressure now to do some damage. Pierre Dorion, what about him in Ottawa?
Yeah.
You know, they're out of the playoffs and all the, I mean, listen, that's all I listened to all summer. What a great job they did. And then they're behind. They got to pass six teams to get in. It's a gong show.
Well, they're not making the playoffs.
No, I know. But seriously, that's with new ownership coming in, that's big time pressure. So there's pressure on everybody.
You don't know what's going to happen. But the thing that scares me about Tampa is they've been there so many times. Like, I feel like Cooper just wants to get in the playoffs. He doesn't need to finish first. And he knows when the real action starts.
More importantly, the players know that too, Bob.
And the players know that too. I think they're just coasting along.
And he's got the best defenseman in the league for playoff style hockey. He's got the best goaltender in the league for playoff style hockey. I mean, he's got some luxuries there. But look, I mean, don't the Leafs have to win eventually? With the team as talented as they are, can this keep going on and on? And I don't really like their blue line. I know they've been good, but I don't really like it. I really don't like the bottom of their lineup. I really don't like their goaltending, but I'd like to see them win. I kind of would like to see them win. Just to shut up the Leaf fans.
Well, just one round? Yeah, that's really all you want, right?
Anything
in the postseason. I don't like him against Tampa Bay in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't either. But you know, whoever they play is going to be tough. Yeah. You know, so they've got to eventually win. This can't keep going on like this for.
Sure, it can. Sure, it can. Look at San Jose. San Jose had how many years where everybody picked them to win, and they'd always fall apart.
Yeah, I know.
It happens.
I know it does.
I'm going to ask a rhetorical question. You ever tank when you were in Columbus? Did you ever say, "Okay, we got to lose"? When we got a chance at the first overall pick, other than your Rusty Klesla, that was as close as you got to the first round. But do you tank for the Bedard situation?
It was really bizarre. And Berkey told me, Berkey said, Doug, being an expansion GM, I remember him phoning me when I was interviewing Columbus. He said, Doug, it's simple. You just are lousy for the first 5 years and you get the first pick 5 years in a row. That's all you do, Doug. It's not that complicated. So after the first year in Columbus, we have this big celebration because we finish ahead of Minnesota in the standings. Okay. And we're picking eighth in the draft. Eighth in the draft. In our second year in the league, we're picking eighth.
Really?
Like, seriously, what was I thinking about? No, we never tanked because my owner, if I ever would have said to my owner, we were going to tank, he would have fired me on the spot. It was all about, we have to be competitive. We have to be as good. And It never entered my mind. And how friggin' dumb was I?
Well, maybe. You know? Except it's professional sports and you're supposed to win.
And he, look, Mr. McConnell in Columbus was a legend. Mm-hmm. People love this guy. He put out $80 million to buy this team. And he said, by the way, it's worth $650, they tell me now. Not a bad deal.
At
he's
least
not around, though, unfortunately. He's not around to enjoy it, but his son is. But you know what? It was never in the cards. And how do you walk into your coach and say, I'm sorry, we're tanking? Boys, there's 10 teams in the league tanking today.
Yeah.
There's 10 of them are tanking out of 32 teams. Pittsburgh tanked to get Sid. Tanked to get Mario. Chicago tanked to get Kane. To get Taves. And I was the dummy that didn't? Seriously.
Well, do you tank all year or do you tank for a game here? Well,
no, you know, you tank when you realize in the first week in November you got no chance.
Yeah. Well. Anyhow, it's funny how it goes, eh?
Oh, yeah. Well, and this kid's supposed to be, you know, Connor Bedard's supposed to be this good, so.
By the way, going back to my book, one of the greatest chapters in the book that I think people are going to love is the Lindros draft. And
why?
The Lindros trade.
Why?
Because I have every deal that was offered to Quebec for Eric Lindros in the chapter. Every deal. And when really? You read these deals that were on the table for this guy, you would not believe it. It is so intriguing. It's just amazing. To read through it, you know.
Because, did they take the right one? As it turned out,
well, no, they didn't get it. They
well, no,
they ended up taking what they thought was the best hockey deal, the Philadelphia deal. They thought was the best hockey deal. But wait till you see what the Leafs offered, what Calgary offered, what Montreal offered, what Chicago offered, what the Rangers offered. It was unbelievable to read these names, you know. So anyhow, it's pretty intriguing.
That was Forsberg plus, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Forsberg, Hextall, I mean, a couple did of firsts, $15 million. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Was there a better deal out there, as it turned out?
The Ranger deal certainly was, I thought, as good a deal. I mean, it was a Monty, it was Richter, it was Orban Biesberg. It was an amazing deal. It came in late. It came in late.
Well, I remember they
went to arbitration.
They went to arbitration to think that, you know, they had a deal done. I mean, that's part of it. People forget that. That's part of the deal. They think the Flyers thought they had a deal and the Rangers thought they had a deal.
And you know what the reason Eric Lindros, everybody says he didn't want to go to Quebec. The only reason he didn't want to go to Quebec, and it's exactly what we're talking to, and it's what made me think of it. He knew that the owner there wanted the team to tank. Yeah. And he was not going to play for that guy because he said, I'm not playing for somebody that wants to tank.
Marcel Aubu.
That's why he didn't want to go. Nothing to do with Quebec. Pretty interesting though, but it's a great chapter for hockey.
Well, we'll read it and be the judge, really. You know, you can't, as an author, now I can speak, you can't say this is my favorite chapter and it's great. You can't do that, Doug. Come on.
I was thinking of my book the other day when I saw Harry's book, price slashed at the bookstore.
You mean Prince Harry?
Prince Harry's
book. I didn't realize you were on a first name basis, the two of you. So,
so when does this epic book come out?
It comes out in October. I mean, it was delayed at least once because of COVID. And so it'll come out in October. So I think people will kind of like it. I kind of like it.
Forget about the book.
His book's the best one that's ever come out. And, you know.
Well, what we're going to do is you and Nick and I are going to have, because it's all the same publisher, Simon & Schuster, we're going to have a competition to see who sells more books in the end. You know, we're going to create a deadline and we're going to see who sells more books.
Yeah, and I think that's a great thing. And you know why? You know the only reason why I want to sell more than you
What's
and
that?
Nick? It's not because of I'm telling you, it's because I want some cash.
Well, you're in the wrong business if you're in the book trading business. I got
by the way, by the way, if you want cash in the book business, I hope you got it already.
Like, in fairness to me, I can't be driving around Delray in a 2018 Porsche. I got to upgrade. Oh, you know?
Forget about it. The book is not going to do it for you, pal.
Might get me a new set of Michelins.
I wrote mine in 2007. I will never write another
one. Hold on. Yeah, and by the way, both of you had somebody help you.
Well, that's true.
Naylor helped you and Morrison helped you. Some people on this show did their own
book. Don't know anybody who could be a ghost. Yeah,
and
that's
somebody
right.
Somebody told me recently that you should have had somebody.
Anybody. Oh.
Hey, and listen, you could bullshit me all you want, Shanny, but I've read your Christmas letters and I know who writes those.
Yeah,
so
Mickey.
She probably wrote your book.
No, she
probably
did. No, she was the one when I said, you know, they've offered me a book deal. She said, why would anybody read your stuff?
Exactly. That's what I said,
too. I think I had a similar thing said to me.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Oh, listen, we got to get out of here. This has been great fun. Maybe we'll talk hockey next time you come on, all right?
Yeah, look, guys, I really, really appreciate you having me on. You know, it's an honor.
No, it's our pleasure.
How is it not to follow Maguire? Seriously. How do you beat that?
Sorry about that.
By the way, I was waiting for that.
Yeah.
What is it? So what's your pickleball champion? The Buena Vista, or what is it?
Well, you know the old Seinfeld, Boca del Vista.
Oh, the Boca del Vista.
Well, that's what they tell. Anyway, I got a match at 12 o'clock. So.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Thanks, pal.
You better limber up.
Guys, thanks. Good luck.
We'll do it again. Doug McLean.
Limber up. Stretch. Do some more stretching for the pickleball.
We'll be back in a minute. There we go. Our thanks to McLean for being with us.
And just before we talk about whatever we're going to talk about, refresh people's memory. Do the Coles Notes version of why you and Doug fought. Because I still remember I remember the conversation on the air where he's yelling at McGowan. McGowan.
Yeah. He
always called you McGowan. He always called you McGowan.
Well, he did that when he tried to be pissed off.
Yeah.
Or make me think he was pissed off.
So this was over a business deal?
Yeah, it was a business deal. He was involved with me in a deal that we were doing, and we had some opposition. It was a sports deal, and he then turned around and went with the opposition.
Oh, really?
So he tried to screw
you. Don't
me.
Want to tell the people what team?
No, I don't okay. want to. I don't
but
want
then
to
at the details. Same time, at the same time, then he went and was put on retainer by Jim Balsillie when Balsillie was trying to buy the Phoenix Coyotes.
That was the deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was what we were, I had a different deal.
Well, I actually thought it was a different team. I thought you had another deal with another team. Well, yeah,
it was the ballsy deal.
Yeah, Jim put him on retainer. And then
which is probably why he went with him instead of going with me.
Yeah, and then Doug was supposed to be his expert in court when they were basically arguing against antitrust laws in the National Hockey League, right?
Yep.
Yeah, well.
Nope, it was.
But now you're friends. Now you're friends. It's
great. You get over it after a period of time. I don't know how long it was we didn't talk. A couple of years, probably.
Well, I still remember the conversation on the air, and all that happened after that was my phone rang, because knowing both of you, I kept getting asked, did you listen to the show? Oh, yeah. Well, what do you make of it? Well, I'm sorry, you never know between the two of you whether it's real or not.
Oh, no, it was real.
And then I realized it was real.
Oh, no, it was real. Yeah, we were really mad at each other. Well, I was mad at him. I don't know whether he was mad at me. He was mad because I got mad.
Yeah, he'd be mad because you were mad.
That's right.
Because he's Doug would have been a terrible guy to play hockey against, don't you think?
Oh,
he'd be chirping all the time.
All the time.
he was chirping all the time when we were broadcasters.
Yeah, you couldn't shut him up.
No. Well, based on the first 52 minutes of this show, we didn't want to shut him up, but he was in good form today.
Hey, I talked to an insider in the NBA.
Yeah.
yesterday on the phone, just by accident. He called me. He's a guy I've known for several years. He tells me that Ananobi wants out of Toronto.
What?
Ananobi wants out.
Why?
And I don't know. But he wants to be traded, and I don't know whether they're trying to do something. You know, he's a name that's been out there for some time.
Well, we've talked about it. He might have, of all the guys, with his age and his skills, he might have the most value as a trade piece for the Raptors.
You might be right.
You know, his versatility.
To want to be traded is a different story altogether.
We haven't heard anybody that wants to leave this town very often. I mean, Kyle did but Kyle could get more money somewhere else.
Yeah, and Kyle's situation in Toronto, you know, at his age.
He had done everything, right?
He'd done it.
But you're saying Ananobi wants out.
Ananobi wants out. So the question becomes, does Bobby make a move? And it would be very untraditional for them to do something at the trade deadline.
I mean, if this is true, Bob, I don't have any reason to doubt you.
I think it is.
Why? I mean, he's the future. In many ways, when we talk about core guys, to me, there's two core guys on this team. Maybe three if you want to put Freddie in there, but Fred's going to be moved, I think. So, I mean, between he and Siakam, those are the key guys. Two guys I'd keep.
Well, I don't think the Raptors necessarily want to trade him. But Ananobi wants to be traded. He wants to get out of Toronto, and I do not know why. I don't know whether it's because the team hasn't played well.
Well,
no idea.
We'll talk basketball later in the week. So
we will. Will you be here for that? No, you won't.
No, I won't. I'll be on assignment.
No, we'll do that on Friday, I guess, of this week.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
In any event, we got to go. Time is our enemy. Thank you, Mr. Shannon.
Baseball tomorrow.
Yep. Shai Davidi with us tomorrow. We'll talk not only about the new Blue Jays, but about some of the prospects on their way up.
Yeah.
Because they've got some interesting guys that they have to make some decisions on. And one of them is their third baseman. We'll talk about that tomorrow, too. Hope you'll join us for that. For John Shannon, Bob McCown, see ya. Goodbye, everybody.